Blackmuir goes into pessimism and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
Hello, Lionel. I say, you're looking a bit tired.
Yes, says that it's the wife, you know, always fears the worst. I don't get any sleep. Every time she hears a noise, she makes me go down as if we've got burglars.
But Lionel, that doesn't make sense. I mean, burglars are very quiet people. If there were any in the house, they wouldn't make any noise.
I told her that, you see. Now I have to keep getting up in the night because she can't hear anything. Here. This broom is hopeless.
Why?
Well, the head's fallen all four times, now the handle's come out.
Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. My little boy has swallowed 17 and a half pence.
How is he?
No change yet.
Doctor, how am I?
Well,
I mean, can I sit up in bed and read?
Yes, but don't start any cereals. An insurance salesman was trying to persuade a young wife to take out a policy on her husband's life, and working rather gingerly around to the subject, she didn't seem to understand, so he tried a more direct approach. Now, look at it this way, madam. If your husband died tomorrow, now, what would you get? Oh, she'd probably be a budgie. Mr. Cohen met his friend. His friend said, have you got over this insomnia yet? He said, no, I can't sleep. It's no good. I can't sleep. I've tried everything. Sleeping does everything. The doctor told me at last I should count sheep. Last week I counted 25,000 sheep. I had the sheep sheared. I had the wool dyed and made up in the yarn and out the Hebrides in the Harris tree. I had it sent down here. I made 45,000 coats. And I can't get any matching lining. How can I sleep?
Well, pessimism is in everyone's nature at times. Fortunately, in most of us, it's balanced by bouts of optimism. But there are many comedians whose stock in trade is a gloomy outlook on life. For an audience, it can be very funny to hear someone cataloguing the disasters which are likely to befall him. Pessimism, as we all know, is fearing and indeed expecting the worst. But perhaps we should get a closer definition from George Bernard Shaw.
Do you know what a pessimist is? A man who thinks everybody as nasty as himself and hates himself for it.
Or another from Elbert Hubbard.
A pessimist is one who has been intimately acquainted with an optimist.
Oh, yes. Life with the eternally cheerful Pollyanna must be very wearing. But I don't know if the company of pessimists is any better. Here's Jean Rostand.
My pessimism goes to the point of suspecting the sincerity of the pessimist.
Pessimism, of course, is not one of the old imperial virtues. It's an attitude that smacks of defeat. G.K. Chesterton.
Pessimism, a thing unfit for a white man.
But it does have its pleasures, says Arnold Bennett.
Pessimism, when you get used to it, is just as agreeable as optimism.
Yes, it's quite possible to have a completely gloomy outlook and still remain quite jolly about it.
They're out of sorts in Sunderland and terribly cross in Kent. They're dull in Hull and the Isle of Mull is seething with discontent. They're nervous in Northumberland and Devon is down the drain. They're filled with wrath on the Firth, the Forth and Sullivan on Salisbury Plain. In Dublin they're depressed lads, maybe because they're Celts. For Drake is going west, lads, and so is everyone else. Hooray, 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 misery's on the way. There are bad times just around the corner. there are dark clouds hurtling through the sky. And it's no good whining about the silver lining, for we know from experience that they won't roll by. With the skull and the frown, we'll keep our peckers down and prepare for depression and doom and dread. We're going to unpack our troubles from our old kit bag and wait until we drop down dead.
Noel Coward. This enjoyment of pessimism can be seen in the relish with which some people have described the misery of life. Some self-indulgence now from John H. Freer.
Despair in vain sits brooding over the putrid eggs of hope.
Sort of lay of the last minstrel. Let's cheer ourselves up now with Gustave Flaubert.
While still very young, I had a complete presentiment of my life. It was like a nauseating kitchen smell that pours through a ventilator. You don't have to eat the food cooked in such a place to know that it would make you vomit.
Oh, yes. More gloom from Ben Johnson.
What a deal of cold business does a man misspend the better part of life in scattering compliments, tendering visits, gathering and venting news, following feasts and plays, and making a little winter love in a dark corner.
What a beautiful line that, isn't it? Making a little winter love in a dark corner. Beautiful. Somehow that sort of pessimism doesn't have much effect. A knowledge of the futility of life needn't necessarily stop you enjoying it. But some people have more cause for misery because of their circumstances. Here's an extract from the introduction to a catalogue of paintings.
Material misfortune seemed to dog him. He was half killed in an accident to the ambulance he served. His house was destroyed in the Blitz and all his unsold pictures with it. He was employed by the BBC.
Poor devil. I mean, given that kind of suffering, it's not surprising that some people get irretrievably pessimistic and want to end it all. When Benjamin Franklin was ill, a well-wisher came and said, "I hope you'll get better." Franklin replied,
"I hope not."
Unfortunately, many people have this attitude at times. Here's a report from the old Manchester Guardian.
It was alleged at Caerphilly yesterday that when a young collier who was lying across a railway track on Sunday night with the intention of committing suicide was told by a porter that there would be no train on that line until the next morning 9 hours later, he replied, "I'll wait till then."
Probably, of course, the train was cancelled because of staff shortage. Death of a thousand cuts, isn't it? A quicker method of dispatch and one favoured by cartoonists is jumping off a high ledge. The trouble with this is that people then come along and try to talk you out of it. Often it's a policeman, and they are trained to play the whole thing very coolly and casually.
Oh, hi! You thinking about jumping, are you? Your first time, is it? Me? No, I'm on my way to work, as a matter of fact. I usually walk around the ledges. I find it kind of helps me unwind. I don't know. You don't happen to be in advertising by any chance, do you? Yeah, I was more than a lucky guess. We got a lot of advertising people out here. Which way did you come out, by the way? Did you come out through the window or did you come around the corner of the building? No, the reason I asked, there are two other advertising guys on the southeast corner. I thought I'd be... You're drawing a hell of a crowd for a weekday. Yeah, really. The last couple of years, jumping has really fallen off. I didn't mean it that way. No, really, seriously. You take 1929, for example. You literally couldn't get out on this ledge in 1929. No, we had people lined up in the corridors just waiting to get out on the ledge. Finally, we finally went to that numbered card system they use in the butcher shop. Do you recall it? Uh-oh, something turned you in. Yeah, you see the guys with the net down there? Yeah, they're firemen. Yeah. I'll give you a little tip there. You might kind of edge your way toward the corner of the building, you see. Then they'll start to follow you. Then you run back here and jump. Well, they get all confused and they start pulling different directions of them. They'll never make it back in time, believe me. Don't be silly. I'm glad to do it for you. Now, listen, gee, I really ought to be getting to work, you know. I'd love to stay around and catch it, but... No, don't be silly. Take your own sweet time about it. Yeah, that is a long way down, isn't it? You're kind of chickening out now, huh? That happens quite a bit. You have a certain responsibility to those people down there, though. Some of them in there a half an hour or so, you know. No, it's up to you. I mean, if you don't want to, you know, you don't have to. Well, all right, sure. Listen, I'll get in and then you follow me, all right? Okay. Oh, one... Now, where the hell did he go?
Bob Newhart. Suicide is, of course, one of the more extreme forms of pessimism, but the feeling's always around in lesser ways. Sometimes it's present, if not deliberate, just an unwritten admission that the worst will probably happen. This is particularly true on public notices and advertisements. First from a cafe.
Customers who consider our waitresses uncivil should see the manager.
An advertisement from a Rhodesian paper.
We can safely say that there is no repair job necessary on the car that cannot be executed more efficiently than by us.
One from the Los Angeles Times.
Foot troubles relieved. Custom-made arches designed and made for your particular discomfort.
Sort of thing can be very discouraging for the potential customers. But there are other ways of bringing someone down. Here's a report from the Sunday Express.
Margate Corporation has a new slogan. There's life in the Margate air. It's being sent to all parts of the country on envelopes containing reminders that cemetery fees for the year are due.
It's just the sort of thing to depress someone, particularly if they're feeling low before. The trouble is, when you're down, no one seems very sympathetic.
I've been very poorly, but now I feel prime. I've been out today for the very first time. I felt like a lad as I walked down the road. Then I met old Jones and he said, "Well, I'm blown." "My word, you do look queer. My word, you do look queer. Oh dear, you look dreadful. You've had a near shave. You look like a man with one foot in the grave." I said, "Boss, I'm better. It's true I've been ill." He said, "I'm delighted you're better, but still, I wish you'd 1,000 for me in your will. My word, you do look queer." That didn't improve me. It quite put me back. Still, I walked farther on and I met Cousin Jack. He looked at me hard and he murmured, "Gee whiz, it's like him." "It can't be. It isn't." "It is." "By gosh, you'd have thought it. Well, I declare, I'd never have known you except for your hair." "My word, you do look queer. My word, you do look queer. Your cheeks are all sunk and your colour's all gone. Your neck's very scraggy. Still, you're getting on. How old are you now?" "About 50, that's true." "Your father died that age. Your mother did too." "The black clothes I wore then will come in for you." "My word, you do look queer." That really upset me. I felt quite cast down. But I tried to buck up and then up came old Brown. He stared at me hard, then he solemnly said, "You shouldn't be out, you should be home in bed. I heard you were bad. Well, I heard you were gone. You look like a corpse with an overcoat on." "My word, you do look queer. My word, you do look queer. You'd best have a brandy before you drop dead." So pale as a sheet, I crawled in the king's head. The barmaid sobbed, "Oh, you poor fellow." And then she said, "On the slate, you owe just £1.10. You'd better pay up. We shan't see you again. My word, you do look queer." My knees started knocking. I did feel so sad. Then Brown said, "Don't die in a pub. It looks bad." He said, "Come with me. I'll show you what to do. Now, I've got a friend who'll be useful to you. He led me to Black's undertaking depot, and Black, with some crepe round his hat, said,
"Hello? My word, you do look queer. My word, you do look queer. Now, we'll fix you up for a trifling amount. Now, what do you say to a bit on account?" I said, "I'm not dying." He said, "Don't say that. My business of late has been terribly flat. But I'm telling my wife she can have that new hat. My word, you do look queer." I crawled in the street and I murmured, "I'm done." Then up came old Jenkins and shouted, "Oh, son! My word, you do look well. My word, you do look well. You're looking fine and in the pink," I shouted. "Am I? Come and have a drink. You put new life in me. I'm sounder than a bell. By gad, there's life in the old dog yet. My word, I do feel well."
Lovely old number from Stanley Holloway. There must be a balance between looking for the worst in the future and remaining sane. News from the Daily Mirror.
Among the town's new proposed bylaws is one that imposes a fine of up to £2 on any trolley bus passenger who throws money to be scrambled for by any person on the road or footway. An official said, "There's no particular reason for the bylaw, it's just a safety precaution."
One tends to meet the sort of person who expects disaster at the most inopportune moment. Just when you're doing something on your own initiative, some gloomy fellow turns up and casts a damper on the proceedings. Alfred, cheer us up with a little poem.
Yes, indeed. This is The Pessimist by Ben King. "Nothing to do but work, nothing to eat but food, nothing to wear but clothes to keep one from going nude, nothing to breathe but air, quick as a flash 'tis gone, nowhere to fall but off, nowhere to stand but on. Nothing to comb but hair, nowhere to sleep but in bed. Nothing to weep but tears, nothing to bury but dead. Nothing to sing but songs. Ah, well, alas, alack. Nowhere to go but out, nowhere to come but back."
Nothing to say, but thank you. Sometimes you wonder if it's all worthwhile. Ambrose Bierce.
"Before undergoing a surgical operation, arrange your temporal affairs. You may live."
Then all you can do is grin and bear it. Of course, that's very much part of the British character. Whatever disasters impend, keep your upper lip stiff.
Is that you, Clive?
Yes, Helen, it's me. I'm sorry. Train was late.
How did it go today?
Oh, same as usual. Sort of choo 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 choo.
No, I didn't mean that. I meant... Oh, well, never mind. Drink?
Thank you, Helen.
Say when?
Helen, I'm afraid I shall have to go out this evening.
Oh, but have you forgotten? Peter and Sylvia are coming over.
Oh, when?
Oh, thank goodness. Here.
Thanks. Helen, can you stand a shock?
Oh, Clive, you're not going to ask me to mend another fuse.
No, Helen, I'm afraid it's pretty serious. I'm sure we can be sensible about this, work it out in some way, together.
You're not trying to tell me...
Yes, Helen, I am.
Oh, no.
I'm afraid so.
What's her name?
Conchita Juanita Lolita Pepita Monte.
She's not foreign, is she?
Yes, Helen. Does that make it worse?
Much. Clive. There's one thing I must know.
Anything, Helen.
Have you actually That is... I mean...
And there, I'm afraid, we must leave.
Hugh Paddock and Betty Marsden interrupted by Kenneth Horne. It could be argued that pessimism is just a realistic view of life, an ability to face the facts. Sometimes it's better to accept the worst, as in this report from the Evening Standard.
The vicar thinks it's impossible for his parishioners, most of boarding house keepers, to keep all the Ten Commandments, so he reduced them to 9 for his services.
Which one did he leave out? You know, find out the interesting thing. Not coveting your neighbour's oxtail. Another example of realistic pessimism from the Reverend Sidney Smith.
I'm just going to pray for you at St. Paul's, but with no very lively hope of success.
Some people live all their lives in anticipation of disaster, while others need an actual disaster to make them aware of it. A letter addressed to the old Manchester Guardian.
The village of Stone in Buckinghamshire, which straddles the main Aylesbury-Oxford road, recently asked for a speed limit. The application was turned down on the grounds that there had not been enough accidents there yet.
Their time will come. We get the juggernauts down there. Strange how we laugh at the misfortunes of others, and yet the funniest comedians are the ones who seem most put upon. Like, for instance, Woody Allen.
My wife divorced me because she thought I was weird. She disapproved of my friends. I have weird friends, or had weird friends. My friend Nathan raised sheep. Used to feed them silkworms, try and get jackets with lining. The Japanese boy I used to hang out with, who flew for them during the war, you know. He had flown 9 successful kamikaze missions for the Japs. And a boy from my group analysis group who was a southern bigot and bedwetter. Used to go to his clan meetings in rubber sheets. This is my bohemian group of friends, you know. My wife did not approve of them at all. And it was my wife's birthday, and we used to exchange novelty gifts all the time. So I bought her in the Third Avenue antique shop an electric chair. Told it was a hair dryer. I blew out all the lights in the house, you know. I gave her a great tan. And all the wires, the electric wires in our apartment, went amok. Everything got ruined, and I started to get police calls on my rotissimat. So I'm in the kitchen one night, I'm barbecuing a chicken. All of a sudden I hear car 22, car 22. So I thought the chicken was talking, you know. So I put my head in the rotissimat. I said, "What'd you say?" My wife entered at that point. Looked pretty ugly. She divorced me. Charged me with conversing with a revolving chicken. She got the house, car, bank account, rotissimat. In the event that I remarry and have children, she gets them.
Woody Allen. And that's pretty well the end of our look at pessimism. Let's conclude with a thought from James Haggerty.
One day I sat thinking, almost in despair. A hand fell on my shoulder and a voice said reassuringly, "Cheer up. Things could be worse." So I cheered up, and sure enough, things got worse.
Next week, Alfred and I will be going into superstition. We'll see you then.
I wouldn't count on it.
Oh, you're right. Nobody's going to listen. Nobody. Bad-bye.
Bad-bye.
Frank Muir Goes Into Pessimism was produced by Simon Brett and John Lloyd.